Welcome back, Deep Divers. We're diving deep today, and I mean deep, into a real fascinating moment in Christian history. It's the rise of something called theological liberalism back in the 19th and even into the early 20th century, and it was like a whole new way of looking at faith, like almost a reset in response to all those really strong evangelical movements that came before.
You got it. We're going to be working with some top-notch lecture material that gets right to the heart of this liberal theology. We'll look at what it was all about, the surprising stuff that shaped it, and where it ended up. It's your chance to really get a handle on a turning point, a pivotal era, really.
And you might be wondering, why should I care? Well, getting this historical shift helps us understand a bunch of theological and even social discussions that are still happening today. It's about those aha moments where the pieces suddenly fall into place.
Exactly.
So
let's jump right in. One of the bedrock ideas of liberal theology was idealism. And this was, at its core, the belief that reality, like the world we experience, isn't just random stuff happening, but that it's all, like, formed in the divine mind.
Okay, so imagine, like, every single thing, the tiniest atom, the vastness of space, it all comes from God's thoughts.
Is that kind of the gist?
Right on. And building on that, liberal theologians really stressed this continuity between the divine and the human. Instead of this strict separation, they saw a deep, essential connection.
That sounds like a subtle shift, but it was a big deal back then. What made them emphasize that connection?
Well, they saw it in a really positive light. Back then, the world was kind of getting pulled towards materialism, individualism, you know, and they felt this link to the divine could help us understand who we are, you know, our purpose, move us away from just selfish stuff.
It's like saying, hey, there's more to life than just me, myself, and I.
Yeah, exactly. And this optimistic view, it really shaped their ideas about the future. They believed in a rational world, one that's guided by God's intelligence, and it's all heading through as positive change.
A rational world. Well, knowing what happened in the 20th and 21st centuries, that sounds a bit optimistic, maybe. You're right. But we got to remember the context. They were in the 19th, early 20th century, a time of big scientific discoveries. You know, social progress felt real. They really felt things were getting better, led by this divine reason.
Okay, I see. So this optimism, it ties into another key idea, the immanence of God. What's that all about?
It means they focused on God being active and present right here, right now, in the world, not some distant, far-off being. And they saw this presence in a couple of ways. First, through nature, like the beauty and order of creation.
Nature kind of shows us something about God.
Exactly. And second, through society's progress. When people work together to make things better, more just, more equal, you know, they saw that as God, always present, working through us to improve creation.
So not just human effort, but like a sign of God's hand at work.
Precisely. And this really underpinned their emphasis on natural law and natural theology. They believed God's plan was unfolding through this inherent order in the world and how we interact. And this natural law, it wasn't static, but it was, you know, progressive, leading towards that brighter future we talked about.
Makes sense. So if God is so present and active, working through natural law for good, what happens to that idea of humans being, well, sinful?
Oh, that's a key point. Liberal theology basically rejected that whole original sin thing. Their belief in human reason, their optimism about our goodness and potential, it made that idea of inherent sinfulness hard to swallow.
But they weren't saying people were perfect.
No. They knew people messed up, did wrong things. But that idea of a built-in sinfulness that separates us from God, that's what they couldn't accept. And this leads to something that became super central for them, ethics.
Ethics taking center stage. What did that look like for the everyday person?
Well, for them, living a good moral life, that became like the most important expression of faith, even more than those traditional beliefs and doctrines. Remember Schleiermacher, his speeches? It's like he was saying, even if those old religious frameworks seem outdated, that ethical core, that's what truly matters.
And less about every single doctrine, more about how you live and treat others.
Right. Ethics became the yardstick for judging Christianity, even all religions. That ethical drive, it was huge for them.
Okay, so we've got the core beliefs down. Looking back, what were some of the good things people saw in this liberal movement? What did it offer folks back then?
Well, one big plus was their openness to truth. They were willing to take in knowledge from all sorts of places, science, philosophy, math. They believed since God made everything, There shouldn't be conflicts between these different ways of understanding, you know?
Yeah, that must have been appealing, especially with all the new scientific discoveries changing the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And another strength was their willingness to criticize themselves. They weren't afraid to look in the mirror, honestly evaluate their beliefs. They'd admit when they might be wrong, and were all about constantly learning and growing.
That self-critique, that's vital for any movement to stay honest and relevant.
Absolutely. And a third big plus, one that really made a difference, was their deep commitment to social justice. They really cared about the poor, the marginalized, the folks nobody else seemed to care about. Think of Walter Rauschenbusch, the social gospel movement, putting faith into action to fight injustice.
And it's interesting, you know, some historians consider Rauschenbusch an evangelical because of that social justice focus. Shows you how these different theological ideas weren't always totally separate.
You got it. Rauschenbusch, while sharing some liberal ideas, also held on to that evangelical emphasis on personal conversion. It's like these developments were all intertwined, you know.
Okay, so liberalism had real positives. Openness to new knowledge, self-reflection, that drive for social justice. But we know it also had its critics, and it eventually declined. So what were some of the weaknesses people pointed out?
One big one was that it lacked a biblical view of God. They emphasized God's immanence, his closeness, so much that they kind of downplayed his transcendence. His ultimate power, holiness, that otherness, God being with us overshadowed God's majesty.
So it's like they made God too familiar, lost that sense of awe.
Exactly. They struggled to balance God's closeness with his sovereignty and glory, like the Bible shows us. And this kind of led to another issue, a lack of a biblical view of Christ.
How so? How did that affect their view of Jesus?
They mostly saw Christ as a moral example, a great teacher, someone to copy. And, you know, he definitely was all that. But critics said this missed his divinity, the incarnation, and most importantly, his saving work on the cross. He became more of a role model than the Son of God who died and rose again to redeem us.
That's a huge difference. Changes how you understand salvation and your relationship with God completely.
Totally. And here's another twist. By trying so hard to connect with the culture around them, liberal theology actually ended up kind of trapped by it. Instead of offering a different, challenging perspective, they sometimes just accepted what the culture was saying.
Can you give us some examples of that, like how they were trapped?
One big one was an uncritical view of science. They'd basically accept scientific claims without really thinking about them theologically. Like, science and religion were in totally separate boxes, and science was always right.
So no room for debate, just accepting whatever science said.
Pretty much, yeah. Another was uncritically accepting radical biblical criticism. This was using historical and literary methods to study the Bible. And some scholars started questioning things like authorship and accuracy. Liberal theologians often adopted those skeptical views without really questioning them.
So they were so focused on being intellectually in that they didn't apply that same critical thinking to the latest trends.
That's a good way to put it. And another weakness was overemphasizing experience. This idea of gefühl, like feeling or complete dependence on the infinite, it became their main way of figuring out religious truth.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, it can undermine objective truths, like the incarnation, God becoming human in Jesus. That's an objective claim. But if everything's filtered through personal experience, those objective truths become, like, optional or even get rejected if they don't feel right.
So your feelings could trump established doctrines and historical events.
Exactly. And this all goes back to their low view of sin and their optimism. Because they didn't buy into original sin, they had this really high view of human potential. They believed we could basically build God's kingdom on earth through social progress.
That optimism, as the lecture said, doesn't quite match up with the not-so-great parts of the 20th century.
Nope. Think of the magazine Christian Century. It was founded with this hope that the 20th century would be the Christian century. But then we had two world wars, the Holocaust. It shows this big disconnect between their ideas and, well, reality.
It seems almost naive looking back, right?
Yeah. And then there's the overemphasis on moralism, which critics saw as basically salvation by works. By focusing so much on ethics, they kind of downplayed God's grace. Like, you could earn salvation through good deeds, which goes against what the Reformation was all about.
So in trying to move past some old doctrines, they kind of created a whole new problem.
Yeah, pretty much. And lastly, they had such a high view of human reason and experience that it led to a low view of divine revelation. You know, things like the authority of Scripture, the importance of Christ as God's ultimate message.
Human reasoning trumped God's direct communication in the Bible and through Jesus.
That's it. So with all these weaknesses, it's not really a surprise that classical Protestant liberalism lost its influence.
And H. Richard Niebuhr, he had a really sharp way of summing up that decline, didn't he? Something that sticks with you.
Oh, yeah. Niebuhr, a really important theologian, wrote this book, The Kingdom of God in America. And his one-sentence summary of liberal theology is so spot on, it goes like this. A God without wrath brought man without sin into the kingdom without judgment through the ministrations of a Christ without a cross.
Wow, that's powerful. It highlights how they downplayed God's justice, human sinfulness, judgment, and even Jesus' sacrifice.
It's a truly great critique, so concise. And it wasn't just outsiders who saw this decline. The lecture mentioned a professor at Brown, a liberal himself, who declared classical Protestant liberalism bankrupt.
When someone from inside the movement says that, it tells you something about how much it had lost its energy and meaning.
For sure. Christian Century is still around, but the lecture argues that classical liberalism, as we've described it, is basically dead, replaced by other movements and ideas that we see today.
So a once powerful movement has faded. Now, the lecture also touched on another big 19th century movement, one that had a very different reaction to the same cultural shifts, the Oxford movement in England.
Ah, yes. This was a whole different response, you see. The Oxford movement, they were known for their deep, deep piety and their focus on what it means to be the church. It started at Oxford University, aiming to go back to the idea of the church as purely divine, based on the New Testament and the early church.
So while liberalism was looking ahead, embracing modern thought, the Oxford movement looked back for guidance.
Exactly. They were concerned about the influence of the state on the church and wanted to recover a more spiritual, divinely ordained understanding of its authority.
Sounds fascinating. Maybe a topic for a future deep dive.
Absolutely. Understanding both liberalism and the Oxford movement gives you a much richer picture of 19th century theology, how different Christian groups wrestled with the challenges and changes of their time.
So, deep divers, we've journeyed through the heart of classical Protestant liberalism, explored its strengths, intellectual openness, social action, examined its weaknesses, how it understood God, Christ, sin, and the Bible. And we saw how it eventually faded, as folks like Niebuhr pointed out.
And this brings us to a big question for you. How did these tensions from the 19th century between liberalism and those other responses, how do they connect with what we're talking about today? What can we learn from all this about faith, reason, and culture in our own lives?
Lots to chew on there. We encourage you to keep thinking about these things. Maybe even check out Fliermacher, Rauschenbusch, Niebuhr. And who knows, maybe we'll take that deep dive into the Oxford movement soon. Thanks for joining us.